Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi guys, welcome to the latest edition of the podcast, and today's guest is well-known journalist Chris Jack. Before I introduce Chris, just a nice gentle reminder that if you're enjoying the podcasts and you want to see more, please hit the subscribe button. If you are enjoying any particular episode, please do me a massive favour and click the thumbs up. And if you want notified of any future podcasts, hit the little bell symbol and you'll be notified. And if you have any feedback about the podcast, please leave it in the comments and join the chat in the community. So now to move on to our latest guest. Chris is a renowned journalist covering sport for a fair time in Scotland, and just I'd like to thank him and welcome to the podcast. How are you?
No problem at all, Craig. Never when I thought when we first started doing business together, shall we say, we would end up in a podcast studio together. It's funny how life changes sometimes. So I've done a few things together over the years, and this is just the latest one.
One of the oddest.
No, I think you've probably done some things that are a bit stranger than this, have you not? The podcast were your more sensible ideas over the years.
I think we've probably known each other since 2012-13, so it's a good 10 years now. You're right, we've done a lot of things together. So, and you're 100%, if you'd have said 10 years ago, you'll end up having a podcast, Craig, and you'll be getting likes of Chris and folk on it. I'd have told them they're off their head. However, here we are. So, for those don't know, but for those watching who maybe don't know a bit about you, Chris, just want to go through life in chronological order. So if you can tell us, you know, where you were born, what family life was like, a bit of school life, and then onto why you wanted to become a journalist and how you made that happen.
Born and bred in Curlook, 1989. People will say I look a lot older than that, but it's been a hard paper round over the years. Really became interested in going into journalism probably about third or fourth year at high school. It's that time of, you know, your teachers are saying, what are you going to do the rest of your life? Was good at English, obviously fascinated by football, by sport, obviously by Rangers. And it was one of the things of, well, if you're not good enough to play the game, which unfortunately I wasn't, now how else do you get involved in the game? How else do you have that passion? So I thought, no, going into journalism was the way forward. So I left school after fifth year, decided not to have the sixth year of not just messing around and sitting in the common room every so often. So I decided to go to uni after fifth year. Had a couple of years at the University of the West of Scotland in Hamilton. And really from there, I've just lived the dream. That gave me the ideal kind of platform to then get into real radio on some work experience, get into the Herald and Evening Times on some work experience. And from that, the whole thing has just really kicked off. So my work experience was 2008, the Manchester season. So I mixed a couple of weeks because obviously the Manchester final was actually the day before my final exam at uni. It was my law exam. So I had the whole thing planned. I was going to do some studying. I was getting the bus down to Manchester, had my ticket bought. It was all good to go. Ticket then fell through, ended up at Ibrox to watch the game and somehow passed the exam the following day. So I dare say it's one of these, all things get turned out for the best, because I dare say if I'd been to Manchester, I might not have even got back for the exam the next day. Who knows? Who knows how that could happen? So one of these things, missed out on the European final, but could never have imagined that not 15 years or so later, I would be at Rangers next European final, sitting in the press box doing it.
Aye, incredible journey, I suppose. When I was down there, I was not allowed to get the second day off. I think I was a sales manager in a garage in Edinburgh at the time, and the guy that was my manager, I think he'd been to Seville a couple of years before it, and wouldn't let me get a day's off. So I had my one day off, and I had to be back in the garage in Edinburgh at 8:30 the following. And I did make it.
Did you make it?
I was a bit of a shambles, but I certainly got there. Something you said there, your initial... introduction into journalism, did you say on radio?
First, as part of the university course, so you had to do a fortnight's work experience. So I was actually lucky, I had a fortnight through at Real Radio on their sports desk, just doing broadcast press conferences and cutting up clips and doing various bits in their office. And then I had a fortnight in with the Herald and Evening Times. So really, I had a choice at that time. I wanted to go down the broadcast route, or I wanted to go down the written press route. Decided that newspapers were the thing for me. I think I've always been more that way inclined. Still remember like picking up the paper, a bit drops to the letterbox. You go down in the morning, you pick it up, you turn to the back page, you see what the stories are. Always got more of a thrill out of potentially being that guy that had that back page story than being the guy that you heard just after the travel report on the radio. So that doing that side of it, doing the newspaper side of it, was where my passion always lay, and where I always get some of myself going down. So as good as the broadcast experience was, and again, 15 years or so later, it's coming in handy. My job with the Rangers Review now, having that broadcast experience is handy. But it's really been it was the newspapers that was the main key driver for me in those early years.
So would this have been 2008 then you're talking about?
2008. That was the work experience. Actually, it was Darrell King that was the main key sports editor at the Herald and Times at that time. So he was good enough. He gave us the fortnight's work experience. I said to him on the Friday, thanks for having us in. Really enjoyed it. Learned more in that fortnight on the desk than I did during the 3 years at uni. There's no substitute for actually going out and doing the job and being in that environment. Said to him, look, that was great. Do you mind if I come back in once I've got once the exams are done and once everything's cleared? And thankfully he said, aye, no bother. So emailed him again a few weeks later on. Thankfully he remembered me, must have liked me. Managed to get back in again. And then every Friday I just said, well, do you mind if I come back in on Monday? And ended up doing that for about a year.
As work experience?
Just kept turning up every Monday, which was good for them because they were getting a full-time member of staff, not also somebody who was of a great standard at that time. You're obviously making mistakes and you're very much learning on the job. But basically just kept turning up every Monday morning, walked into the office with a rolling sausage and put a cup of tea down and says, right, here we go. Thankfully, they never said, look, no, this isn't for you. It's time for you to move on. Because I've seen that there's been a number of other work experience guys. I've seen scores come in over the years, and you can tell fairly early on who's potentially got it, who's not. And thankfully, the guys there, Marcel Darrell, he was the main man, but a number of guys, too many to actually mention, who gave you a bit of advice or took you for a coffee or took you aside and showed you the ropes. And then eventually... they allowed you to go up and do actual press conferences, so not to go and ask questions, just to go and see it. So you go up to the training ground and Walter comes in, or then Ali comes in and players come in, like Steve Davis or McGregor or Davey Weir, and you just get to sit and watch the press guys actually go do a proper press conference, and then eventually say, look, you can go and do Rangers yourself. And that then, ever since that, that's kind of kicked it off. So it would have been Warburton's first season, was the transition from doing SPFL stuff, doing Partick Thistle, doing Motherwell, doing Clyde and Albion Rovers, to then go and doing Rangers. And we then got that big break. I say from there, it's really just getting kicked on. But I had a really good grounding of doing your Motherwells and your Thistles and Killies. That gave me a real beat. It gave me a chance to actually go and speak to managers, speak to players, find out how to write, actually writing like shorter stories is almost as difficult as writing longer ones. If somebody says, give us 250 words, you have to get the whole thing right in 250 words. You can't mess about with it. So having that ground and being given that responsibility to go and cover a fairly large patch and a lot of clubs really gave me that key standing. And obviously see guys from other papers, you meet guys from the SFA, the SPFL, and you start to kind of grow your reputation, can grow your standing in the industry a wee bit. As I was in that Warburton season, I really felt the time was right to kind of push on. So there's a bit of movement in the office. Somebody left, somebody got moved up, and the Rangers job then became available, and I was the ideal man for it.
So going back to this 2008 year, when work experience is finished, you just every Friday said, I'll see you on Monday. Last night almost went in, you know, and that went on for about a year. Incredible.
You basically just keep chapping the doors. There's at that time, and certainly now, there's very few journalism jobs here. Certainly the newspaper side of it, it's a very, very difficult industry to get into. I think when I started uni, there was 30 of us started the course. By the end of the 3 years, I think there was 7 of us graduated, and there was 1 of us actually got a job in newspapers. And that, thankfully, that one was me. So that job, the attrition rate is huge. It's a really difficult industry to get into. And even once you get in, it's a difficult industry to then maintain a place in, because the competition for jobs, competition for stories is obviously huge. So it's not an easy gig. And if you don't put the hard work in, if you don't miss family holidays, if you don't work on extra hours, if you don't do things for free as I did for a long time, you might not make it. So it's just a case of keeping asking the questions, keep banging the doors, and eventually you always hope that you get your rewards at the end of it. And I say, thankfully, I did.
Do you think your success then in becoming a journalist, do you think out of the 30 that started this course and you were the only one to finish the course and then obviously those 7 going to work as a newspaper journalist, was it just down to determination and drive then?
I think a lot of it is that, because I wouldn't profess to be the best writer in the industry. There's guys that are far better wordsmiths than me. There's guys that have far better contacts than me. There's guys that have, even now, guys that have got a lot more experience than me. But it is just coming down to, look, I'll just go and do things for you. So if you needed a Motherwell game done on a Wednesday night, I'll be there. If you need to go and do, I'll be in Rovers again someday on a Tuesday night, I'll be there. If you want something done on Christmas Day, I'm your man. And I think that's the people, perhaps one of the things that actually annoys me about the perception of journalism a lot is this lazy journalism thing. It couldn't be further from the truth. There are guys who are more committed at it. There are guys who are better at it. There are guys who put more into it. But everyone who is still in the industry right now is there for a reason, because there's a queue of guys behind you who would easily take your job. If the call came and you're out the door, there's a stream of guys that would then take your place. So everybody has to earn their stripes in this game. And that thing of lazy journalism does irk me. People don't like what I write, they don't like an opinion, they don't like my style of writing, they don't like how I actually go about things. That's fine. But this thing of, oh, you're playing at it, couldn't be further from the truth. MD that has got to a certain level, they've put the man hours in, they're putting the blood, sweat and tears over the years to get to that standard.
Yeah, I think journalism, and I've never been a journalist, but for those who don't know my history, back in 2012 when I started a protest movement, I had a lot of contact with journalists, so I got to see a lot of what they've done and whatever. And I think it's one of those jobs that it's not an occupation, it's just a lifestyle. That you know, I can't remember too many times where I phoned a journalist and they've no took the call, whether it's 8 a.m. or 9 p.m. I don't think, you know, that way when you phone somebody and you get that peculiar ringtone, you think, oh god, he's on holiday, where they've no answered it, and you go, look, where are you? I mean, Turkey, I'm in Spain, I'm in America. Oh, listen, I'll get you when you're back. No, what is it? And they want to know, and they want to do something. And it is, you know, one of those lifestyle jobs rather than just an occupation. Is that a fair assessment?
It's not a 9 to 5. It's not a, you start your shift and as soon as you're done, you close a laptop and that's you. You could do 9 hours. If the phone goes 5 minutes later, well, you're then doing another hour, you're doing another 2 hours, you're doing it until the job's done. It's not that case of, well, you've got a set hours, you've got a set way of life. I think one of the best examples is that the day that Gio got sacked, we had the story first. It was on our website first, one of the best ones that I've had. I think the phone went at 8:05 or so in the morning. So I'm lying in bed with the missus, just a normal Monday morning, maybe Tuesday morning. And also there had been talk over the previous couple of weeks, Gio was going to get sacked. Everybody thought this was going to happen. And then died down a wee bit. I thought, well, maybe he's going to survive. So phone goes, manager's gone, go and check it out. If I'd seen the phone and thought, ah, it's 8:05 in the morning, I'll phone her back after I've had my breakfast, I'll get up, I'll go for a shower, and then I'll phone that guy back. You'd have missed the story. By that time, everybody else has then got it, because also everybody's on the similar case. And if you don't answer the phone, if you don't answer your text, if you don't go and say ask questions, and you don't go and chat doors, you're not going to get anywhere. So that's been one of the best stories that I've had over the last wee while. As they say, it's only exclusive once. Now, within minutes of us having that story on the website, The Record had it, Sun had it, Daily Mail had it, because everybody's also on the case. Everybody has their own contacts. Everybody's got their own people that are telling them things. As if I just said, I'll go for a shower, I'll get a rolling sausage, and then I'll phone that guy back, I would have missed it. And we then wouldn't have had the benefit of that. We then couldn't have said, well, we told you first. And that, I think that perhaps sums up the case of it's not 9 to 5. It's not a you work when there's stuff to be done. You work all the time almost. And that's, you're almost having to explain that to friends and family. I started seeing my new wife, Lindsay, 3 years ago this month, actually. And everybody's got this preconceived idea of, oh, you get paid to watch football, it must be great. And it is great. It's the best job in the world. I wouldn't swap it for anything. But there's a lot that goes into it. It's not just you turn up at 3 o'clock on a Saturday, you watch the game and you go up the road. It's a lot more than that. And if you want to do Rangers, it's a lot more than that as well.
And then, I mean, you've had a long career, but it's relatively short in journalistic terms, mm-hmm. about 15 years. As a non-journalist and someone who doesn't work in the media, I can see incredible changes in the media in that time, probably even shorter than that, probably the last 10 years it's accelerated a bit. But then there seems to be this passion, need by the public now of instant news. I sort of saw this as a member of the public, probably with the advent of Twitter. Mm-hmm. Twitter would just have things on it before newspapers could react. And now I think a lot of it, and it's a sad part of journalism, I don't like it. There seems to be people who that seems to be their job, just to watch social media and react to social media rather than go and get stories. But how do you see these changes as a professional in the game?
I think it has changed a lot. Even in the last 4 or 5 months, I've moved over to the Rangers Review. It's a slightly different brand of journalism, if you like. It's a bit more in-depth, it's a bit more considered. It's not that one-hit wonder. It's not that kind of wham-bam, there's a story, and let's move on to the next one. We do take time to really get into things a bit more. We do Josh Barry that I work with does a lot of tactical stuff, which is a bit different. Not like 10 years ago, nobody would have taken tactical pieces in mainstream media. There's a lot more goes into a number of the pieces that we do to try and give people a bit more insight into how decisions were made or players' backstories, or certainly in terms of new manager coming in, a lot of work went into finding out, you know, what's he like as a person, what's he like as a coach, speaking to former players, speaking to former staff, and there's a lot more in-depth stuff has gone into that over the last wee while. But as you say, there's the other side of it that it's just that instant gratification. It's a, well, former player says that on Twitter, there's 250 words of it. And I think it's sad in a way that has become the norm for some people. And I know you get a lot of feedback on social media and people say to you, oh, it's just clickbait. But the numbers in these things speak for themselves. If the numbers weren't there, if people weren't clicking on it, if people weren't reading it, not interested in it, then papers and desks wouldn't do it. So it's easy for people to say, no, that's rubbish. Why are you doing that? They're doing it because there's a market for it. It might not be the type of journalism that you want to read, but there's clearly a market for that type of content because people are clicking on it. And there's obviously a move towards trying to get people to pay for adverts on websites, and certainly our website is paying for subscriptions. We believe that is the model for journalism going forward, is people paying a monthly subscription to kind of read our content, to get our breaking news, to get our insight, our analysis, to do our video stuff. So that has changed a lot, certainly over the last 10 years. But I think it's just like every other. It's like football in general. Things have to evolve. Things have to change. Nothing stays the same forever. And ultimately, the guys that are good at it and the guys that want to go with it will go with it. The guys that are maybe a bit more old school will say, no, that's not for me, and that's fine. But I think that in terms of like news coverage right now, if you want in-depth stuff, we're providing it for you. If you just want instant Twitter reaction, there's a market for you. And I think that's one of the perhaps the better thing about the Scottish Press at the minute. We are providing for every type of audience, no matter if you want a TikTok, if you want to consume your news on YouTube, if you want 3,000 word long reads on our website, if you want broadcast stuff, or you just want there's a whole range of ways for you to consume your news. I think the business and the various desks are evolving alongside those key change in like public attitudes.
Yeah, I think listening to what you're saying there, I think there was a middle bit where you had mainstream media or new media, which was social media. Mm-hmm. So do you think what's happening now is the mainstream media are now reacting to this to fill both markets? Is that what's basically going on?
I think papers are also having to evolve and news organisations are having to evolve. You see, like, people want short, sharp things at times. So not everybody has the time to sit and read the paper front to back. Not everybody has time to sit and go on our website and read 2,000 words of my post-match analysis or a big interview that I've done or a big feature that I've done. So we try and provide it in shorter sections for you. So that's why we do videos, we do podcasts, we do TikTok and YouTube stuff. I think other desks, other organisations are coming around towards that as well. But it's still, ultimately, it's about providing the best content possible. So no matter what format that content takes, we have to serve the audience, because if we don't serve the audience will then go somewhere else. The media market in Scotland is hugely congested. And we've had guys in our organisation before comparing us to like Southampton or to Bournemouth and say, well, they get that on their website and they do that and they do that. Bournemouth, with all respect to them, it's a one-city club with a market that's everybody's focused towards that. Up here, we've obviously got two that dominate. But the actual landscape up here is so different to down south. Because not every city down south has two clubs the size of Rangers and Celtic. And then on their doorstep, you've got most of their Premiership, plus all your lower league teams. It's a very different media market up here than it is down south. So you're only in Glasgow, or only in Scotland, as well as the Herald and Times, and also the Rangers Review as part of that as well. You've got the Sun, you've got the Record, you've got the Mail, you've got the BBC, you've got Sky Sports, you've then got your broadcasters like Clyde and PLZ. There's a lot of people looking for the same stories, a lot of people looking to tap into the same kind of audience. So as much as you have to follow the pack, everyone is always looking for that latest innovation. Everyone's always looking to be slightly different. Everyone's always looking to be better, because there only is a certain number of people that will consume Scottish football. And everybody's aiming for that same market. But up here, it's a really, really competitive, and there's a friendly rivalry amongst a lot of the guys I speak to, guys from other papers and guys from other organisations. I speak to them more than guys on my own desk. I can go days or weeks without speaking to guys on my own desk, guys from other papers you got on with. So there's that kind of competitive there, because we all want to be first. We all want to have the Geo story first. We all want to have Rangers' latest signing story first. But it's that competitive, it's that difficult. That's why when you do get a win, if you like the Geo one, or you maybe break a transfer story, or you get something nobody else has got, you really have to savour it, because the wins, in that sense, are actually few and far between, just because there's that many people all looking for the same thing, certainly when it comes to Rangers.
So you're mentioning there a lot of other mainstream media bodies and organisations. With the advent of new media and social media and all these easy access things, people mm-hmm. have got to suddenly present stories to the public. Not just Rangers and Celtic, a lot of clubs down south, even smaller teams in Scotland, have now got like fan media. Mm-hmm. Now they're all delivering out in the same outlets now, because not many people are buying papers. Are the fan media now becoming competition for traditional media?
I think the fan media rise and rise has been really interesting development over the last couple of seasons, because it really came from almost from nowhere. There's always been podcasts, there's always been bloggers, always been people writing and speaking about everyday in Rangers terms, always been people doing that over the last couple of seasons. But we've really seen the kid rise of it. I think that was perhaps aided by the club's stance during the 55 season and during the Seville season. The club themselves made a more concerted effort to bring the fan media guys on board. So that allowed them to have a platform, allowed them access to matches, allowed them access to press conferences, and basically gave them the kind of insight and gave them the kind of access that we were getting. Because as their access increased, a lot of the mainstream media guys, whether it be broadcast or whether it be written press, it did go away. It did diminish. The hours that I spent talking to, wasted hours, if you like, I spent talking to guys about that strategy, knowing that it was made high up. Basically, there's very little we can do about it. Thankfully, it's now changed. Rangers as a club and as an operation are far more open to guys like myself, because they see guys like myself and guys at other organisations, they see them as people who want to work with the club. That's not to say we'll toe their party line. That's not to say we'll do their bidding for them. That's not to say we'll do exactly what they ask of us. But there's a happy medium to be struck of keeping people on side. A bit of you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. And I think the club now realise that there's a better way of operating with the fan media that they've helped mobilise, I think, over the last few seasons. There's a way of working with them and getting the best out of the people that consume that part of it. And there's a way of working with more traditional media guys like myself and the way that fans then interact with us as well. So I think the club have struck a balance now, thankfully, that wasn't there for a long time. And I think during those seasons, the club and a range of things actually suffered because of that. And that's no disrespect to the fan media guys that were doing it, because the opportunity arose for them. They made the most of it. Like me, I got my chance and made the most of it. They saw their chance and they made the most of it. And they're then allowing their audiences to consume their output in their own ways. And it's no harm to them at all. I just think there was a better way of that balance being struck between fan media and traditional media at that time, where everyone could have lived in the same small ecosystem. Everyone could have lived and operated in the right way. I don't think the club got that right. And that's something that thankfully they realised themselves about 18 months or so ago now.
Yeah, and obviously you've answered that in quite a specific way about Rangers. I was thinking about just more out with Rangers. Rangers probably a wee bit of a unique club in that aspect, that when David Graham came as a PR guy, he decided to shut the door on everybody's face and just have fan media. And I found at that time, I thought it was quite a strange strategy. And a lot of fans, you know, you've got this thing that you've got to hate that journalist because he said something in 1998 about Ian Durant, or you've got to say, you know, and there's preconceived ideas about who you should and should not follow, which I've always found a bit bizarre. But there was this sort of battle between all the press are bad and fan media is good. And I just felt it was dealt with incorrectly. And at any time where I said, well, when you questioned it, oh, you were hunted down in packs. Well, how dare you suggest that fan media might not be great? And I'm like, because that guy's telling them what to write. Fan media can only work when fan media is allowed to be independent. And I think the 2 years without getting into specifics are probably wise enough to understand that wasn't what was happening at Rangers for a fair amount of time. And it becomes North Korea. And I think now if we've got mainstream media and fan media working almost in tandem, then you're going to get more balance and possibly fairer coverage. But I still think, and again, at any time you mention the word fan media and you see anything that might be perceived as negative about it, you get shot down. But what I'm going to say, you know, I think it's easier for a professional journalist to write a story and print a story more independently, taking a step back. Now, you've obviously already made it obvious that you're a Rangers fan, but you're a professional journalist. If you hated Rangers, it would be even easier for you to write a bad story about Rangers. But, you know, when you're a fan media, I think it's going to be a wee bit more difficult, even, you know, with the perfect conditions, to write that bad story, knowing that it's far easier for them to just take your press pass off you. Mm-hmm. Whereas as a professional journalist, there's loads of professional journalists who have still carried on being sports journalists reporting about Rangers while being banned at Rangers. Mm-hmm. It doesn't stop you doing your job. But if you're a fan media, you rely on that connection. And again, it's you keep reiterating this. That's not having a pop at the guys that are delivering fan media. That's just the reality of the situation. But the question wasn't specifically on Rangers. Mm-hmm. It was just the media in general, and clubs and football and sport in general, that if you take Rangers out for a second because of the peculiar situation we had there, is fan media in general becoming competition for mainstream media across UK in football terms?
I think in terms of being competition, yes, because again, we're all going for the same audiences. So no matter what club it is, perhaps not even matter what sport it is or what league we're in, there's only a set audience for each club. So whether it's Rangers, whether...
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
It's a basketball team, whether it's a rugby union team, there's only going to be a set number of people that are invested enough to consume all content around about that. So as the more people that are providing content on that particular club, that particular league, the better, because that then gives fans more choices. It gives them more options. They can read, or they can do podcasts, or they can do however they see it. But the more people that are covering that club, also competition then rises. If you've only got a club, and it's, I say, like that Bournemouth example I used, they've got the local newspaper. They might have a branch of fan media, but it's not going to be anywhere near the same that we've seen up here. And you're seeing guys that are doing video blogs. There's guys that also have written blogs. And it's good if you're just a normal Joe Public punter. There's never been a better time for you to consume whatever brand of media you like. Now, whether you want video stuff, whether you want written stuff, whether you want it on TikTok, whether you want a podcast that you can listen to in the car, there's never been as many different avenues for you to actually go down. Now, that also keeps guys like myself on our toes, because we have to keep a hold of our section of the market. We need people to subscribe, we need people to read. But if you're, whether you're traditional media or whether you're fan media, you're doing it for a reason. You're doing it because you want to get your messages, or you want to get your coverage out there. If there was no market for fan media, then there wouldn't be any. The fact that we've seen this rise and rise, and there's people, you know, kind of launching things all the time, they clearly feel there's a market for it. So I think from a professional perspective, it does make it difficult, because I said there's more competition than ever. There's more people invested in football coverage than ever before. But if you're just a fan, then it should be the best time ever, because as I say, you've got as many different avenues to go down as possible.
Yeah, and I don't think the Herald will be unique in what they're trying to do with the Rangers Review and make it more fan specific, more club specific. And is that not going to make the differentiation between fan media, inverted commas, amateur, which it's not really doing, we'll go into that in a minute, against mainstream media professional? Is it becoming a wee bit more blurred and less obvious what is fan media and what is mainstream media nowadays?
Again, I think if we do Rangers specifically, because that's the area that most I can invest in, the area that I know most, I think there are clubs who still try to have that set line of, This is the media organisations that we want to deal with, and that's your traditional ones, that's your newspapers, that's your broadcasters. And then over here they say, well, we might see this rise, we might see podcasts, we might see bloggers, we might see YouTube guys, but we don't really want to deal with them right now. There will come a point where clubs may have to open the doors to these guys. I say Rangers have been more open than others. There's some clubs who don't let the fan media guys that we've got, some clubs that don't let them in, that don't let them into the games or the press conferences, and that's fine. Every club has their own media strategy. As I say, the Rangers one has evolved, and I think it's evolved quicker than maybe even a lot of the guys in the media expected. Because during the era that you mentioned under the previous comms chief,
his name's David Graham, mate. Are you scared of him?
Under the David Graham regime, it went from 0 to 60 fairly quickly, because we knew that there was these, obviously, podcasts and there was blogs. There was guys who were doing a lot of good Rangers content, and their content is good. And in no way am I trying to knock down what those guys are doing, because they do serve their audience, and they do serve their audience very, very well. But Rangers went from nothing to quite a lot very, very quickly. And I think from the more mainstream guys, pissed a lot of guys off, to be honest, because they saw their access being cut. They saw these guys, well, who are they? Now, these guys are not professional. They saw these guys coming in and doing the pressers and doing the games and doing things that we were not allowed to do anymore. And I think it created an animosity there that didn't need to be there. I think the clubs, if clubs are going to learn anything from the way that Rangers handled it, it should be that. So whether you're a Premiership club or a Championship club, whether you're a rugby team, a basketball team, ice hockey, no matter what it is, learn from the Rangers' mistake and don't just say, well, now's the time. We're going to bin all these guys that are hugely experienced, have great followings, papers that are still selling millions of copies a day combined, website hits that are tens of millions combined. We're just going to say, nah, we're going to scrap all that. There was a way of doing it that was far more advantageous for the mainstream media, far more advantageous for fan media, and advantageous for the club. Rangers didn't get that right. And I think if other clubs are going to move towards involving fan media alongside more traditional media, they should learn from those mistakes.
I think one of the biggest mistakes Rangers made at the time, when David Graham was there, was they didn't grasp the importance of the media. And what I mean by that is, you might not want to agree with us on camera, but I'll just say it as a fact or an opinion of mine, which I believe to be factual. But the role, the relationship between club and media, and I'm not just talking about Rangers here, generalising, is not all about what that paper writes. Equally, and sometimes arguably more important, could be what that paper doesn't write, which could be a bad story. Now, I'm not saying covering stuff up or anything like that. I'm just talking about stuff that the fans might like to know. And I think you'd need to be pretty naive to believe that some relationships between clubs and media can help stories not get put out, mm-hmm. which hold the club in a bad light. So if your relationship with the mainstream media is good, it enables you to have those discussions. But the minute you shut the door to them, then what chance have you got of have that relationship can't influence the stories that aren't getting written before then, or potentially don't get written later on? And although that might not be something fans are comfortable with, because they think, oh, we want to know everything, that's a harsh reality. Mm-hmm. And as soon as I seen this move to cutting off the media, I thought, I know what happens next. Because the guy who's got a column to write on a Monday, or the guy that's got three stories to write for a Tuesday, still has that column to write and still has those stories to write. Mm-hmm. And if they've got nobody that they can trade information with, in terms of, I tell you what, I've got this story, you want me to write that? No, I don't want you to write that. Well, what can you give me to not write that? That's how it works. Whether you're happy enough to agree with that or no, I don't know, being a professional. So when that's taken away, that guy that's got the column to write, that guy that's got the three stories a day to write about Rangers, they've got to write something. Mm-hmm. And if they've got a wee bag with two or three bad stories that they could exchange for three or four good stories, if that option isn't there, then they need to write bad stories. And I've just seen it almost immediately. Even guys that are, what you'd say, balanced reporters on Rangers, you could see there was a bit of an increase in the bad stuff. Mm-hmm. Even words used and paragraphs used. Is that a fair assumption of what happened, or am I just crazy?
No, I think you've summed it up fairly well and quite succinctly there, Craig. I think the relationship was damaged. Even at a very, very basic level, the night we lost in Amsterdam to Ajax, so for people that don't know, after a European game, clubs are asked to do what's called a mix zone. So the players are meant to walk through a certain area of the stadium. So the manager will do his press conference in the press conference room, and other guys will then go into the mix zone. So players walk through and we then speak to them about the game. So we can use it live that night. We can hold it for the following day, hold it for the following day. After the Ajax game, obviously it's not been a good night for the club, not been a good night for the team. We are standing in the mix zone. Time's marching on. Manager's done his post-match presser. We need something for the travelling day to go home. We're getting up the next morning, getting on the plane. As you say, we've still got the same space to fill. Guys are looking for a back page. Desk are looking for a spread, maybe even two, depending on how the night's gone. And we're standing in the mix zone. See the players walking out of one end of the dressing room and told, walk around, straight out, onto the bus and away. Don't stop, don't speak. So even guys who, like stalwarts of the mix zone, like Steve Davis, Scott Arfield, Tav, Conor Goldson, guys that you would bank on to stop, not just to fill spaces, guys that would actually have a considered opinion, guys that are good to speak to, traipsing through and one by one saying, sorry, head down, headphones in, pretending they're on the phone. And that was self-defeating because we woke up the next morning before we went home and we still had that space to fill. So either you put a player up who says, hands up, sorry, I lost my man for the first goal, shouldn't have capitulated like that, won't happen again, we'll learn from it. That then gets the club's message out, that gets the team's message out. It might not be the whole truth, but it gives the fans something. If they don't do that, we slaughter them because it's then our opinion. It's then if we've, no matter how we've seen the game, it's then our opinion that goes in that day's paper during from the match report, and we then need to provide some form of analysis or opinion afterwards. If the club fill that void, it's their message. If they don't, we're more than capable of filling it ourselves, and we have to, and we will do. And that's just at a very, very basic level of being able to control messaging. Think back to the Australia debacle of the Sydney Super Cup. It was evident that this was going to happen. Deal had been done. It was all in place. Went to the club night before. Guys were told, look, this will break overnight in Australia. This is going to happen. It's going to be announced. Went to the club. Do you have any comment? How do you want to steer it? How do you want to play it? We're willing to work with you here to try and get put across your point of view in a certain way. And messages came back saying, we're still finalising our plans for the winter break and for next summer. And that was that chance gone. As soon as that lie basically came back, that was that chance gone. So when news then breaks and it becomes evident the fans are not happy, we can then pile in. Because if you're not going to play ball, why should we play ball with you? I think, I said, the club suffered a number of ways during that time, not just on Australia, on SPFL, on TV deals, on SPFL votes, on no matter what the issue was. Rangers had no avenue to get their point of view across. They had no way of building a consensus. They had no way of make friends and influence people. And that's something they've, as you mentioned, they've lost that, or they did lose that from a journalism perspective and point of view. Lost it from other clubs as well, because they had this, well, we'll just stand in the corner. No one likes us. We don't care. That doesn't help you get things done. That doesn't help you form a consensus. That doesn't help you build relationships. That doesn't help you put your point of view across. And whether it be media or whether it be other clubs, whether it be political bodies, that stance of we're just going to go and do our own thing, if nobody likes it, well, fine, you're an enemy of the club. It was just nonsense. And I say thankfully the new regime or the new guys that are there do understand that. That's not to say they'll always pick up the phone and say, by the way, Chris, this is happening, or that's happening, or that's happening, but they're more open to trying to do business properly. And again, that's not us simply putting out press releases and putting out exactly what they say. We still ask tough questions of them, we still pester them, we still go to them all the time. I dare say they get annoyed every time their phone goes and it's myself or somebody else wanting to know what's happening with Graham Souness, what's happening with director of football, what's happening with the manager, what's happening with our signing. That's our job. I think they now understand that job and respect that job, rather than case of, well, you're just annoying us, we're just not going to speak to you.
Yeah, I think through that, excuse me, through that period, it was obvious where my opinions were with some of the things I put out in social media. I was quite vocal about people involved at the time. David Graham, wrote some blog type things about that, and because of that, I had people coming and talking to me about their experiences. And without getting into names, I had people contacting me from the press, professional journalists, telling me the way that situation ended up. So, you know, the contact would be made. Look, I'm going to write this story tomorrow. I know Rangers are trying to buy this guy. Is there any club want to say? And getting told no. Okay, I'm going to write that story tomorrow about the set of accounts just released. Do you want to clarify X, Y, and Z? No, we don't talk to the press. All that sort of stuff would go on. And then you would get a phone call, or the journalist would get phone calls from the club, the PR team in the club, saying, any chance you can put this in the paper? Now, that to me, you know, that was so obvious from the minute the club had this strategy. I could see it. You're like, no. So see those good stories, like maybe one of the best things Rangers do, which is always full of easy, good stories, is a charity foundation. Rangers Charity Foundation is a fantastic thing. I could write a story once a week about Rangers Charity if I was a journalist. So if Rangers Football Club want these things, and, you know, like the Rangers Youth Development Company, another great arm of the club, they're not going to get the support and get these stuff that deserves columns and inches written about them and clicks on Facebook if the door's shut. And I know factually, because people did come and talk to me, I built up a lot of contacts back in 2012 to 15 area with journalists. I still speak to them, yourself included, to this day, and it's not always about trying to get stories in the paper. And when they seen what I was writing at the time about the PR strategy, I was getting loads of phone calls saying, fair play to you, Biggin, and you've seen it. And I'm like, it was just so obvious. But getting back to the sort of fan media versus traditional media, mainstream media, as a consumer of media, I find it fascinating the differences in quality that both can put out. And people maybe think I'm going to suggest mainstream media that far is a very, you know, far better quality than fan media. It's actually not. It's not the opposite either. When you look at fan media, and the majority of mine is Rangers, because I'm a Rangers fan. But when I started this podcast, I did start looking at a lot of other things to get ideas, to get, you know, what does the good look like? How should I deliver things? So I've researched quite a lot of media output, you know, when I was starting this. And let's take the fan media first. The difference in quality between the best and the worst is massive. It is absolutely massive. For someone, it's just two guys in a bedroom and, you know, iPhone mic and shitty cameras and stuff. And they're still delivering information, but the way it's delivered is pretty poor. And that is what it is. It's, you know, just guys doing it for an enjoyment, and that's fine. And then you get to the opposite end and you can see some actual proper quality delivered pieces, you know, well written, well presented, well researched, very presentable product getting put in a fan. So the gap between the best and the worst in fan media is very, very big. But then if you look at traditional media, I don't know if you'll agree or you maybe don't want to agree, but I see the same gulf in traditional media. There's some product getting put out there by traditional media that is so substandard, if you weren't educated enough in who you were looking at and watching, you would think it was just a fan media guy and somebody sitting with an iPhone. But then there are some very, obviously, professionally produced stuff going out by the mainstream media. Is that a fair assessment, do you think, or am I being blighted here?
No, I think it is fair. I think some of the Rangers fan media guys do a lot of really good work. They put a lot of time, I've invested a lot of money in it as well, and they're getting the rewards from that. I think we've seen a number of other podcasts and our blogs and stuff start up. Not everyone who starts one is going to get the stage of sitting in front of the manager on a Friday or getting to go to a game or doing European away trips. The guys that are doing that have put a lot of time and money into it to get to that level. And it's not a case of, well, it's not as easy as, well, I've got a blog, I'm going to email the Rangers PR department and say, can I come to the press conference on Friday? It's not going to happen. These relationships and that standing has been built over a long, long time. And the people that are at that level are very good at it. I listen to a lot of it myself, read a lot of it myself, because it's handy to know. It's good to know what their views are. It's good to know what the fans are thinking. but also because a lot of it is, it's insightful, it's informative, and it is just enjoyable to actually consume as a news consumer. In terms of the paper guys or the digital guys, I think a lot of it's driven by cost implication in terms of the number of staff. There's guys that have got targets to hit in terms of hits. So if you know that former player X says this on Twitter, if you know that's going to get 25,000 hits and you've got a hits target to try and match, well, you'll do it. I don't think MD who is doing that type of work, nobody, I think back to myself, when I was going through my degree and doing the work experience, that's not the type of stuff I ever wanted to be doing. No, I don't think MD enters industry saying, I want to spend 12 hours a day ripping things from Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, and ripping off other people's websites just to try and hit a target just to keep myself in the job. I don't think that's not the dream. It certainly wasn't mine, and thankfully it's not my reality, because that's not how we are judged, and that's not the type of work I'm asked to do at the review, thankfully. But we've seen as financial implications on desk, as numbers are cut, the pressure goes up, as the drive towards, I say, some organisations having targets for hits to drive advertising revenue, that's, they're then going down that particular path, and the journalists have no option but to, and they either do it or you go and find employment elsewhere. As I said earlier on, if you don't do it, somebody else will, and if they don't do it, there's five behind them that will, because everybody wants to get involved, everybody wants to have that crack at the media, and everybody wants to have that crack at the career. So I think it's difficult, because as we've seen, certainly when I first started in the Herald, there's maybe a dozen, 14 dedicated football writers on the desk. 18 months ago, there was only three of us. So that obviously leads to a reduction in what we can do. Herald Sports section at times was maybe 20 pages. There's sometimes now it's 12 pages. So going from four football spreads down to two football spreads, by the time you then take in your rugby and your athletics and stuff at the back of it as well. So people get out of the media what they put into it. The more media they consume, the more money they put into the industry, the more people that can then be hired, the better the product becomes. And it's easy to say the press is worse and the output is worse. It is, to an extent, in some regards, it's a lot better. It's a lot more professional. It's a lot more polished. But you only get out of it what you put in. If news consumers don't invest in media organisations, ultimately media organisations can't invest in proper journalists, in proper equipment, and doing the types of stories that they want to do. So I think the industry has changed a lot. But the number of people that are involved in putting a newspaper out or putting a website out or even covering a press conference, mentioned earlier on, egging back and doing the Walter Pressers, there was times we would send three, four people up to Auchin Howie to do a press conference.
From the one paper.
From the one paper. So somebody would go from the Herald and do manager and player. Somebody would go from the Evening Times. One person would do the manager. One person would do the player. And you then have a Sunday guy going up as well. So from our office, we'd all jump in a car. Four of us would drive to the training ground, spend an hour and a half there interviewing the manager and a couple of players, and then go back and write it. Just doesn't happen now. Now you can have one guy doing it for our website on the review, potentially doing it for the Herald website, that then goes in the Herald paper. Now that has changed a wee bit, but that has been the case over recent times, where the numbers of journalists actually working on certain beats, working on stories, it has reduced. And I say our desk, or the Herald desk, is vastly, vastly reduced in terms of when I started out. So that's clearly going to have an impact on the product. Again, as I said earlier on, that's not a slight on the guys that are doing the job. The guys that are doing the job are still as professional and as hardworking and as ever. They're having to put more into it now than guys from 10 years ago, because if you were on that desk 10 years ago and you didn't come up with a back page story, there's a chance that the guy sitting next to you will have a back page, or the guy sitting over there will have a back page. And then as that evolved and the numbers then reduced, it was a case of, well, you need to come up with a back page, because if you don't, there's not one. If there's not one, that's then a problem. So it's, I say again, it's no slight on the guys that are doing the job, because they're putting so much into it to try and put out the best product possible. And it's, I think it becomes easy for people to then have a kick at that product.
You touched on it earlier, and it seemed to be a driver for you, an inspiration for you to become a journalist. Was that ambition of having the newspaper drop through your door, opens up the back page and it's a wee photo of you, Chris, and you've got the headline in the back page. Unfortunately, the way things have transpired and the way the media's went, that's probably not going to be a driver for the next generation. But, I mean, I'm a dinosaur in a lot of respects. I'm older than you and probably older than most of the people who are going to be watching this, but I kind of miss that. And if that's not, I mean, papers could not survive on paper spend now, just people going out and buying a newspaper. People still do it, but nowhere near the numbers they did back in the 80s and 90s and previously. So newspapers have had to evolve or they just wouldn't have businesses. But I just think there will be casualties, obviously, as things evolve, because as we've already discussed, if the non-professional outlets and the professional, traditional outlets, a lot of these new outlets are professional. You mentioned the one with the three initials that I can't remember. We say PSG, but it's not.
PLZ.
PLZ. That is a professional body. It's a non-traditional news outlet, right? And that will increase as well through time. There'll be news organisations that will start that have never printed a paper in their life. So is that a concern that the traditional newspapers then will survive going forward?
I've had this conversation almost since day one. Number of people that have said to me, oh, newspapers won't be here in 10 years. Mm. Well, that conversation was had more than 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And there's no sign of papers closing, thankfully. Now, that's not to say that journalists haven't unfortunately been made redundant. There's cutbacks all the time. There's cutbacks ongoing all the time. We've lived through that in our place almost since the first year that I've been in there. But the Herald is now in its 240th year. It's had to evolve. It's had to change the way that it does business. It's had to change the way that it attracts advertisers, had to change the way it attracts readers. And I think whether it be any website, any podcast, any newspaper, anyone that doesn't evolve and change with the times, you will be left behind, because the pace of progress now, it's nothing like we've ever seen. And the way that the media is evolving, the way that things are going, the pace of news is ramping up all the time. And if you don't jump on that train, you will be left at the station. And if you're left there for too long, unfortunately, you will feel the consequences of that. So I think we have seen a change in how media is consumed. We've seen a big change in how media is produced. But I think people who still want to produce media and people who still want to put a paper out or put a website out, they're still putting so much, I say, time and money and effort into it. And they can only hope that the general public, the people that are buying the paper or people that are subscribing to a website, only hope that they actually appreciate and understand what's actually going into it. Now, that's not to say that over the coming 10, 20, 30 years, there will be casualties, unfortunately, because that's just a numbers game. We've all seen the year-on-year decreases in paper sales. We've all seen the cost of living crisis. We know that people are going to cut back on things. We know that newspapers are a commodity that people will cut back on. We know that website subscriptions may be something people will cut back on. And all we can do as professionals actually within the industry is try and put as big a sale on it as possible and say, look, if you are cutting back on areas, this is the one thing you don't want to cut back on, because from our perspective, we think we are providing you the best range of Rangers coverage possible. We're giving you your breaking news, giving you exclusive news, we're giving you your comment, we're giving you your insight, giving you your match coverage, we're giving you your social media coverage. And if people think that's worth paying for, great, because the more people that pay for it, the more we can do. The more people that buy a paper, the more journalists that can be hired. The more journalists that can be hired, the higher the quality of the product. So it almost comes down to, what do news consumers want? If they don't want a thriving Scottish media scene and they don't invest in it, then that's what they'll get. If they do want a thriving Scottish media scene or a thriving football scene and they invest in it, it will then go from strength to strength. The two things have to go hand in hand. It's not a case of papers will just continually invest in a paper or websites will continually invest in a website that's not going to make any money. Everybody has to make money at the end of the day. But if people don't invest in that themselves, then I say that the quality of the product will go down. I say it's not through a lack of effort, it's not through a lack of innovation, it's not through a lack of trying through from the people that are involved in these things. But the two things have to go hand in hand, and ultimately, the Scottish public will get the Scottish media that they want and deserve by whatever they put into it.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.